Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Dieter Kurtenbach, Fox Sports, will join us in a few moments. Tony Knopf, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, in the final half hour of the show. Still to come later in the week, Solomon Wilcots is going to join us. We'll talk about the NFL. John Aurand from Sports Business Journal on the mega contracts that the Big Ten is about to sign, actually in the process now of signing, to cover the next 6 years, starting in 2017. We'll have John on later in the week, and also Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Reports. We have a lot going on the show. Earlier in the week, former Nittany Lion Tim Frazier sticking with the New Orleans Pelicans, signing a two-year, $4.1 million deal. Congratulations to him, one of the truly great guys out there, and you know darn well with some of that money he's taking care of his mom. Special guy, and he's landed in a great spot in New Orleans with Anthony Davis. But when it comes to big money contracts, that sounds great. You and I would love to have 2 years, $4.1 million. But money that's been doled out in the NBA, it ended up between $2 and $3 billion in salaries doled out. And for some odd reason, Dieter Kurtenbach did not get a dime of that along the way. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but he didn't get a dime. It had to be tough to cover something like that. Dieter, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Whoa, why would you say that? That's cruel. I mean, of course I'm going to get that number.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
While I think you're worth that number.
Yeah, it's been really kind of strange because the market was set so quickly this offseason. Usually it takes a while to ramp up. Typically it's the guys like Kevin Durant or LeBron James who set the market. This year the market was set by Timothy Mozgov, who the Lakers decided, for no apparent reason really, to pay $16 million a year over the next 4 years, despite the fact that he was statistically one of the two worst players in the NBA. Technically they upgraded, but The market was set really high really early, and it kind of made everything very strange from there on out.
Yeah, it really was strange on out because it's not really what Durant gets. I never really thought twice about what Durant would get or what Al Horford would get. What really struck me was the amount of money spent on what you would say would be the 20 through 100 free agents, many of whom will not start.
Yeah, and it's just a strange byproduct of a strange time for the NBA when it comes to the salary cap. It went up $24 million this offseason. The NBA league office tried to smooth it, tried to spread out that $24 million over an extended period of time. It'll go up about another 10 next year because of the new TV deals that the NBA has. The NBA Players Association said no, and I think that they're coming to regret that because there's going to be a lot of guys in locker rooms who are going to be making $20 million next year and not going to be a $20 million a year kind of player compared to their peers who signed contracts not this year. I mean, it's the only year where I think this sort of anomaly is going to happen because the market will situate itself.
Why did the Players Association make that decision?
I think that they are – we might be heading into a lockout. The CBA is up after next year.
Right.
So I think that the NBA Players Association is keen to not concede any points to the league at this juncture so that they don't start sort of on the back of their heels once actual negotiations on the CBA show up. They didn't want to – I think it was basically that they didn't want to concede anything, and it was going to be a boom to players even though – it's really only a boom to some of them.
Under the current agreement, obviously the television money is exponential. I think it was, $2.66 billion this year between ESPN and TNT. So what would the owners have to complain about, and what would the players then have to complain about?
It always comes down to percentages. Everyone always wants more. So that's what they're complaining about. There should be no issue. There should be a 50-50 split. But, I mean, some NBA teams are not making money,
right,
to be totally fair. So it's all about the large market versus the small market, who's being benefited. The owners want the hard salary caps so that they don't have, the small market owners don't want it so that guys like LeBron James and Kevin Durant will only, Kevin Durant being the best example, going from a small market to a big market. Right. The big time owners want to keep more of the lots and lots of money they're making. So it's just greed, really, on both parts. There's so much money in it. Everyone can get some of the pie, but everyone wants more.
Right. You covered the Warriors extensively over your time. What did you think about the Durant move, and how does he fit with Golden State?
The Kevin Durant move is like it's frighteningly perfect.
Yeah, I thought so too.
You slide in. I mean, he is. Let's just presume the Warriors change nothing from their offense and their defense. You've now basically traded Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes for Kevin Durant and Zaza Pachulia, and I think that the league office would have negated that trade had it been suggested and the Mavericks been dumb enough to take it. Mm-hmm. So it's really astounding how good the Warriors' offense is going to be next year. I've been trying to break down in just some of the plays that I know they like to run and sort of seeing where Harrison Barnes is on the court. And about halfway through that research, I just had to stop because it's like they're going to score 2 points every possession. There's no way to stop this team.
Right, and you can't. People can talk about height, inside game, and so forth, but they have so much firepower, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and Draymond Green is such an excellent player at sort of handling the paint. I think Pachulia was an amazing pickup. But you want to talk about great pickups for the Warriors. They got Zaza Pachulia, who was a borderline all-star last year, a player roughly on par with what Andrew Bogut provided the Warriors last year, maybe not so much defensively, but equally offensively, I would say. And they got him for $2.9 million, a mid-level exception sort of deal. That's the kind of shrewd moves that make the Durant thing possible, that they can go out and get a guy like Pachulia, really lose very little from the starting center position, and still go and make the massive upgrade from Harrison Barnes to Kevin Durant. And to be fair, I like Harrison Barnes a lot.
Yeah. Dieter, what about the Celtics? They rarely have been a player that in the free agency where they picked up somebody and you went, wow. But they got Al Horford. What about that move and that fit?
I like Al Horford in that offense and that defense a lot. I think that Brad Stevens is going to have a lot of fun with a versatile big man like him. They do a lot of the same things that Horford was doing in Atlanta, the Celtics did with Kelly Olynyk last year. And so that's sort of a one-for-one upgrade. You think to yourself, and they still have Kelly Olynyk, but you think to yourself, how much better is Al Horford than Kelly Olynyk? And then you think, well, that's how much better the Celtics will be next year. I don't like the fact that they let Evan Turner go, but given the amount of money that was offered to Evan Turner, you can't really match that. I think the Celtics probably put themselves in a position to be the second-best team in the Eastern Conference. Now, I don't know if that's good for much with the way that the Cavs look, but it's certainly better than they were last year.
Yeah, no question. What about Chicago now? That Derrick Rose is is dealt to the Knicks. They get Rajon Rondo. They get Dwayne Wade. They lose Paul Gasol. They still have Jimmy Butler. What do they have?
I think that they have a team that looks it doesn't look as much like the team that they had last year, but it probably performs at the same level.
Yeah.
I've been talking to people. I grew up in Chicago. I talk to people who cover the team, who know the workings of that team, and I'm like, what the hell's going on with this team? What's their plan? What's their goal? And no one can tell me what the idea was of bringing in Dwayne Wade when a week earlier the GM of the team, Gar Foreman, said that they wanted to get younger and more athletic. Well, Dwayne Wade's probably the worst possible pick if you're looking to do that. So what's the plan here? I think that they wanted to move to an up-tempo Warrior-style offense, and the moves that they made, I like Rondo for that. I think he's a marginal upgrade over Rose, but Wade really messes that up. He doesn't shoot three-pointers, much like Jimmy Butler. He's kind of a drive and kick guy, but he doesn't have the athleticism to do it anymore. It's a really baffling move, and I think it puts the Bulls in a really bad position, not only for next year, but the year after. As long as Wade's on that team, they're not going to be able to actualize what it is that they want to do offensively.
Yeah, I looked at the same thing you did, and I thought, okay. I didn't see what they were doing here. Paul Gasol going to San Antonio. San Antonio can be a player in this, where does he fit, especially with LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yeah, I think that he's probably – I think that they probably start like two centers. I'm not sure how they'll – what kind of terminology they'll use, but I think Pau Gasol starts for that team, much like Tim Duncan did last season. It's a Tim Duncan stopgap. I mean, Tim Duncan's probably going to retire. That's the word, and we'll see if that actually comes to fruition. But I don't think that the Spurs did anything this offseason to improve their chances against the Warriors from last year, much less the Warriors coming up. If they think that it's an upgrade from Tim Duncan to Pau Gasol, and Pau Gasol is a surefire Hall of Famer and one of the best big men of a generation, but he's still old and he still can't run, and you still kind of have that problem with LaMarcus Aldridge not having a lot of mobility, and Tony Parker's a year older, and Manu Ginobili is coming back but wants a bunch of money, and you don't have David West. And it's like, well, how much can Kawhi Leonard improve from this year, which he had an amazing MVP-worthy season this year, to next year? And I just don't know how much higher the ceiling is for him, but he's going to have to reach that and more if this Spurs team is going to compete, maybe not so much in the regular season with the Warriors, because I don't think the Warriors are going to win 74 games, and I don't think the Spurs are going to win 67 again next year. But in the playoffs, when it comes down to short rotations and really, you know, best against best, I don't think the Spurs match up with the Warriors that well.
No, they don't. And, in fact, if they were to get into a series, I think the Warriors would just literally wear them down just on speed.
Right. Yeah, and I think that that's sort of what happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder series when you saw, I mean, the Spurs were favorites going into that series, and a lot of people disagree with this, but I thought that the Thunder just ran them off the court, that they couldn't handle the athleticism and explosiveness of that Thunder team, and that's what turned that series for them. So they didn't do anything to address that problem, and that was their biggest problem.
Yeah. What about Steph Curry's contract? This is an interesting one in all this because he signed it a couple of years ago, and right now he's a bargain.
Yeah, to say the least. That said, Steph has been extension eligible for a while now, and he has deliberately not gone about asking for the money that he absolutely will get from the Warriors next season. He's already contract that his cap hit low, so that the Warriors could be more flexible, a lot like the way the Spurs have handled business and a lot like the big three in Miami did theirs. So Steph knows that he's going to get the largest contract in NBA history next offseason. That's been in the books since he won the MVP. The Warriors and him have talked about it. They said, you know, let's keep you at the value you have. You're making all this endorsement money. You'll be fine. You're going to get $200-plus million next offseason. And in this way, we can get Kevin Durant, or we can go out and get another big-name guy in the 2016 offseason. That's exactly what they did.
All right. I know it's just the summer league, and it is just that competition, but have you had a chance to watch any of it? And if so, what did you think of Ben Simmons?
I love Ben Simmons. Oh, my goodness. I'm having basketball nirvana moments watching Ben Simmons pass this ball against a bunch of guys who won't be in the league. It's really, really fun. And if Ben Simmons ever learns to hit a 10-foot jump shot or beyond, we're all going to die by his hand. I mean, he's so good. His court vision is amazing. I'm not sure if it's LeBron or if it's Magic, but the fact that we're using those names after two or three summer league games only indicates how much talent this guy has. He's better than what I remembered from him at LSU. So, the Sixers tanked for a long time to get a number one guy and get that superstar that they couldn't get in free agency, and they might have found it.
I remember a couple months ago there was a debate here about whether it be Brandon Ingram or Simmons, and I said, look, Simmons brings an element to the table the Sixers don't have, so you got to go with the guy that brings you the different element, and that's him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Brandon Ingram's going to be an absolutely fine player, but Brandon Ingram's not going to take over the league. He's Kyle Korver at best.
Yeah,
he's a 3-and-D guy. I mean, that's a very valuable thing to have in the NBA, but if you can get a transcendent superstar kind of player, even if that's just potential and he might not reach that or even come close to it, you have to buy into the talent.
Yeah, there's no question. No question. What's the state of the league, in your opinion, right now? Is it, you know, in terms of the level of play you're watching and how this has played out, what do you think the state of the league is? If you were to sit down with Adam Silver and he asked you that question, what would you tell him?
I think that for casual fans, for fans that like the league as a whole, it's never been in a better spot. There's a lot of intrigue. If you bite off a lot, you can get to some really good stuff with this NBA right now. For the casual fan who just sort of turns it on when the game comes back on TV, I don't think it's that great. I think that there's too much top heavy power with this Warriors and Cavs teams right now, and that's something that's going to have to be addressed.
It's interesting you bring that about the top heavy part, because I look at, for example, Minnesota. I feel like Minnesota's doing something, but they're so far back, it's right. Like they're shoveling garbage against the tide to try and do this.
And that's the biggest issue. Mediocrity has never paid in the NBA, but it's certainly not playing right now.
No.
And so you have to be a team like Minnesota that's building up for something. But what are they building up for, really? They're building up for when LeBron James is no longer in his prime, and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green decide that they don't like playing together anymore. They're waiting for something that's 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years down the line. That's what they're building up for. Teams like the Sixers are in a much better situation today than they were before Kevin Durant showed up in Golden State, because the gap is so massive. In order to make it up, time is the biggest element. So if you're a team like the Clippers, or you're a team like maybe even San Antonio, I mean, it's got to be really hard going into this, because you don't want to blow up a team that could theoretically, that has the talent and the pieces to win a title, but they're not going to win a title. So what's the point? And that sort of existential crisis is going on for at least 10 teams in the NBA right now. And I think a lot of teams are going to try to position themselves not so much for the year-to-year, but for five-year plans, and I don't think that's great for the league.
Yeah, I think that a couple spots it's really bad to be in right now, which you talked about, the Clippers and the Spurs, who are in the neighborhood, but they don't have enough to get over the top. And then, of course, there's the Atlanta Hawks complex, where you're constantly
right.
good enough to make the playoffs, but but you're just treading water year after year.
We're going to find out a lot about what owners' true intentions are when it comes to the next couple of years.
Yes.
Do you want to be a playoff team and get that gate money, or do you want to win a title? Because in order to win a title, you cannot be treading water. And there's a lot of teams that should have been, were title contenders before Kevin Durant went to Golden State, but now they're water treaders. And what are they going to do to get themselves either over the top or set themselves up to be in position when the window actually opens again?
Dieter, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Great stuff as always.
Love coming on with you guys anytime.
Dieter Kurtenbach, Fox Sports. Have they ever doled out some money? It's why we talk about the business of sports on here all the time, because it is a business. And, we're talking about salary caps, Kevin Durant's contract, Al Horford with the Celtics, at the lower end of the scale, Tim Frazier with the New Orleans Pelicans signing his deal. Of course, Mike Muscala's had his deal with the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, people are making money, and it is a business. You're trying to make money. You're trying to make money as a player. You're trying to make money as an owner. And part of that is trying to win as well. And how do you do that? Well, you have to spend money to get there. Now, that's why, what's interesting, though, is that when you look at the basic agreements, I mean, the NBA a year from now could be looking at a possibility of a lockout. Why? I mean, there's so much money to go around. Major League Baseball, now, of course, here we are the day after the All-Star game that took place in San Diego last night. Here we are now looking at the second half of the season, which brings with a lot of exciting possibilities across the board. And at the end of this year, the basic agreement is up. Now, there has been baseball labor peace for a long time. But that 94 lockout, remember, the 94 lockout's 22 years ago. And they still have not completely recovered from it. So they're going to sit down. They'll go through at the end of the year and hammer out a new basic agreement. But baseball, I don't understand why these sports feel that they can afford to have lockout strikes and things like that. As Dieter mentioned, there's probably some NBA owners that aren't making a lot of money. Of course, we're seeing the salaries they're doling out. But that's why we like to talk about the business of sports. That's why we're trying to get and have been successful in getting John Auerrand from Sports Business Journal on the show. He does a great job covering it. And also Solomon Wilcott's coming up, looks like tomorrow, and Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, coming up on Friday as well. Final half hour, it'll be Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, to join us on the show. We're looking forward to that and his perspective as always. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Saving money on your next vehicle is as easy as SMC.
Sunbury Motor Company.
Since 1915, SMC provides total commitment to complete customer satisfaction. Sunbury Motors sells and services new Fords, Lincolns, and Hyundais in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And new Kias on the Golden Strip in Hummel's Wharf. No one beats Sunbury Motor Company's lowest price promise. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. SMC, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Sports Talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us. Our thanks to Dieter Kurtenbach from FoxSports.com joining us in the previous half hour in the NBA, Kimberly Jones, NFL Network, and the opening half hour, John Solomon from CBSSportsNet.com. Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, still to come. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. All-star break right now. We'll still talk about the business of sports. Solomon Wilcott's coming up tomorrow. John Auerran from Sports Business Journal. And on Friday, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We have a big week still on tap here as we head into the second half of the week. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. You got to go with UFC. Let's see. McGregor, not going to fight. Rousey, not going to fight. Holm, lost. Not going to go. Defending champion, lost. Jones, drug test, no. I mean, it's just, their entire card was built on these people back in January, and they're all no-shows. They win. A big winner against soccer. Copa America now at finishing up, has already finished up. And Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Tony, give me a success number here on what Copa America meant and has meant to the ticket-buying public.
It's funny. We talk about this from time to time when we get together. If you're looking at metrics for a business in sports, soccer is exploding right now. It hasn't reached scale, so to speak. So, you know, you have a casual fan who's going to say, nah, it's not the NBA, it's not Oakmont coming up in a couple of weeks, but everything they're doing is trending so far up, and Copa is no different. This is the strongest Copa they've had in a long time. It's the first major soccer event they've had in the United States since Women's World Cup, and everything they're doing on that side of the business in North America is taking off, and so it's been very, very strong. You know, corporate influence within Copa has been much stronger than it's been, you know, at any point in history.
There's no question that what's happened internationally has helped MLS. Is this now a point where you're seeing, because of the growth in MLS, it's now helping, for example, now the United States host events like Copa America?
Yes. It's not just the fact that people are more interested, they're spending more money on it. I mean, that's the obvious thing that brought us the World Cup when it was here, and also the Women's World Cup. But it's also about having facilities for it, right? It's not just about having the fans, because we know we're going to have people travel here, and you know you're going to have enough economy to drive it. But now they have facilities in all of these cities that allow them to host something in a world-class facility. It's really helping. I mean, soccer is on the way up, as we've talked about. I mean, I don't think that's changing anytime soon. They're building a 24,000-seat stadium in Orlando. You know, they're talking about Miami. They're talking about a number of different places where there's already a strong enough interest and passion, and they have a business model that works that, you know, it's been long enough. The MLS is for real. It's just a question of, and I'll say it because it's true, which of the four majors does it overtake first? Because it will.
Right. And it's on the march. There's no question about it. About that. I mean, and you're around. You mean, you know what the buys are. And it's not just the buys of the average fan that fuels, obviously, filling seats, but it's the buy of the corporate group.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing buys in the corporate group increase each year because they're seeing and feeling it?
Significantly.
And it's not just MLS. It's all the international events, too. It used to be a little bit under the radar when a team like Bayern or Manchester United or Chelsea came over here and played some matches. Now it's not. Now it's a major event. It sells out the Rose Bowl. It sells out AT&T Park. It sells out Levi's Stadium. And that's what we're seeing across the board. So corporations know, and they're starting to get more involved in it, especially when you're starting to see some of the other events weaken a little bit, right? Ticket sales for Rio are not great. Yeah. They're blaming it on Zika, but there's a lot of different factors that have to do with that. But, you know, while we're seeing these other sports try to kind of find their way into the new generation, the millennials, soccer has done it. And it's just going to keep getting stronger. And like I said, in our lifetime, it will overtake a top four. And people have been saying that since the 60s, right? But this time it's actually happening, right? This isn't just we think this might happen. No, the numbers are showing that this is it's a certainty. It's just a matter of time.
You and I usually seem to think on the same wavelength. You mentioned Rio because I think you sensed that was going to be my next question anyway. So, but what are the factors? I mean, the realistic factors why Rio is not resonating?
Rio's not resonating. One, we just had the World Cup there. So you are repeating at a location within 4 years of when you've been at that location. But right. Two, you know, the corrupt way that ticketing and sponsorships has been done is no longer working. We're starting to see, Schneiderman's report come out about ticket scalping and bots and how tickets are being distributed.
Yes.
You're starting to see some backlash about that across North America and across Europe with, you know, StubHub and Getmian getting in trouble over in Europe for having tickets in advance and breaking their scalping laws. Well, now the consumer is getting smarter. And the consumer is starting to see what's happening with the Olympic Games and realize that I don't have to buy all the garbage to go to the one or two events I want to go to. So what's actually happening right now with Rio is a lot of tickets are being given back to countries that they weren't originally given to, such as the United States, such as the UK. A lot of the resellers that they use that in the past all the tickets have gone through. So for those who don't know, generally what happens is the Olympic Games chooses a seller for their tickets, and then that company goes and sells all their tickets. If the games completely flop, which really doesn't happen often, it happened a little bit in 2008 in Beijing because of location, they'll start to give tickets back to the organizing committee, and you could actually just go to the real organizing committee and buy tickets to the Olympic Games, something I haven't seen in 25 years. Mm. And it's happening on a mass scale right now in Rio. If you want to go to Rio and buy a ticket right now, you could go to the real Olympic Games site and buy a ticket, and that's because they tried to oversell them, and to be totally honest, the Brazilian real is not worth anything anymore. The exchange rate has dropped by 40% since the games were announced.
Tony, a lot of corporate buys to do this were made a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
What,
oh, yeah.
You know, were the corporate buys originally strong, and is it really even possible to make a late corporate buy because even they're seeing what we're seeing?
The corporate buys were strong initially. Now they're furious because the exchange rate was 3.5 to 1.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it was 2.3 to 1, and right. Now it's 3.5 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
So the value of what they bought is already down 35% in a year and a half because oil collapsed. And they don't understand that that's why. Now with Zika virus, corporations are not going close to it. I haven't already planned for it. The ones that have planned for it, they're going to be down there. They've got huge programs built. They're going to get a pop out of it. You know, we support the United States Olympic Committee there. We support NBC. We support a number of different players. But if you're, you know, looking at events in the past where there's been like a last minute push to go to London for 2012, we're not seeing that in Rio right now, no. And that's why all of these tickets are just sitting there unpurchased. If you're thinking about going to an Olympics, this is the one to go to. You can still get tickets. You can get them relatively inexpensively. It's on the same time zone as we are, so the events won't be at a strange time. If you're not afraid of Zika virus, now's the time to go.
All right. After going to a non-traditional location last year in Chambers Bay, the USGA comes back to an absolute staunch traditional area in Oakmont next week, and I'll be there to cover it next week.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I'm jealous. You're on the way out there.
I know, and it'll be incredible. What is it meant that it actually is going to a known entity of all known entities to corporate sponsors, especially a place that's laid out for it like Oakmont is?
It sold out 4 years ago.
Yeah.
People know that that's not only is Oakmont a traditional place for the Open and one that people love, it's also a place where there's been drama in the past, and almost every time that they go there, there's drama. The course is built for it. There's history there. It's one of those things where when Chambers Bay was hurting last year, they were trying to sell people on, hey, we can get you better access at Oakmont if you buy some stuff at Chambers, right? And that was the approach, was if I called Oakmont and said, hey, I'd like to buy, you know, the sponsorship and have five tables and bring 50 people and, you know, write a check for $500,000, the response was, that's okay, how about we make it $400,000 to Oakmont and $100,000 to Chambers Bay, and you can take 50 people to Chambers.
Right.
And as you and I saw, they bought it and they just didn't go.
Right.
Right? And it was, it was made for TV, and I don't know, I didn't think it was really that great on TV either.
I thought it looked bad on TV. I thought the course in particular just didn't look, the coloring of the grass and everything that went with it just wasn't, it just didn't have the feel. How about that?
I did not walk away from that tournament thinking that's on my bucket list of places I'd like to go play.
Yeah.
And every now and then they'll go somewhere like Whistling Straits, which I've heard of but don't know well, and then I watch them play there and say, okay, I need to go play there.
Right.
Chambers Bay, I thought, I'll pass. I don't need to play that course.
Hmm. Yeah, and then you look at Oakmont, and not only that, but you and I have discussed, when we talked about Marion before, they had to make a lot of accommodations, front yards, backyards, to get corporate tents in. Oakmont is set up for this. Give me the importance just of pure setup that makes it even more attractive for sponsors.
Well, that's the key is, you know, the U.S. Open, for those who are casual fans, I don't think people realize how big a production it is. It pretty much necessitates either a very large plot of land or at least 27 holes and usually 36 holes. So you can use the other 18 for player tents, for setup, for corporate sponsors, for all the things that underwrite the event itself. I mean, people can hate on corporate sponsors all they want, and they do. But corporate sponsors are the ones who are allowing these events to grow into the size that they are and have the amenities that they do for the fan that, you know, pays $100 and goes and attends it. At Marion, you just didn't have, you didn't have it. There's no space. You're in people's front yards, in people's backyards. The players didn't want to go to the player tent. It was a bad experience for corporate sponsors. It was just one of those things where the game had outgrown it. Oakmont's not that way. Oakmont has plenty of room for everybody. It has a tradition. It's on the list with Pebble and number two and the places where they're bucket list U.S. Open locations that people want to go to.
And by the way, for the non-golf fan, he mentioned number two. That would be Pinehurst, by the way. Just so,
yes. So, yeah. Pinehurst number two.
Tony and I speak the language here. All right. We'll shift gears for a moment. How does baseball look right now across the board to you?
You know, baseball, I'll give the honest truth about baseball, and it doesn't make me popular in baseball. They like to talk about how much growth they've seen, and they like to talk about how healthy the sport is and how it's at historical highs, and that's great, and it is. But the reality is, if baseball is on the block with the other majors and with the other sports properties, you know, living down the street from the NBA and the NFL and the NHL and, you know, the EPL and all the others that are out there, and La Liga, and you say, okay, yeah, great, you've grown, you know, X percent over the last 30 years, but how did that compare to your neighbor? To the NBA? How does that compare to the Barclays Premier League? How does that compare to the NFL? And it's peanuts, right? So it's great that they're saying, look, we've been fantastic, and, you know, the value of our franchises have gone up X percent, and we have higher TV numbers than we've seen. Our attendance is relatively flat. Maybe it's up 1% or 2% over X amount of time, even though we have much more capacity than anybody else in more games. The reality is, when you look at core business metrics between baseball and the other sport, the other major sports that reside on the same block with them, it's been paltry.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear it, but that's just the facts. I mean, anybody could look at those numbers and say, look, I mean, let's talk about how franchise values have changed in baseball from, you know, 1988 till now, and let's look at the change in the NFL, right?
Right.
It's significant, right? You and I both remember baseball used to be king. It's not anymore.
Sure was. Well, and Muhammad Ali's passing this week, it also should remind people that in the 50s and in the 60s, you and I both know it was baseball, boxing, horse racing.
Yep. And Bob Bowman says that a lot. He's the president of MLBAM, which is their arm that does all of the digital advertising and all of the online presence for them. And he says all the time, you know, the three biggest sports in the 50s and 60s were baseball, horse racing, and boxing. Look at where horse racing and boxing now. And that's where most of us will raise our hand and say, okay, so you survived, but you've ceded so much land to your competitors. Yeah. In fact, you know, if you ask anybody that's a millennial or like a late Gen Xer, you know, baseball doesn't register.
All right. Timing means a lot, obviously, and you know about timing. In what you do, timing means everything. You have to make buys. You have to make buys 12 to 18 months ahead of time sometimes. So you have to have a gauge on timing. The Big Ten appeared 3 years ago to be in the perfect spot. You know, they're going to go last in the TV negotiating. Then about a year ago, you started to get the feel like, well, maybe this isn't the best, you know, spot to be in because the landscape changed so much in 2 years. Now it seems like they're in a good spot. The Big Ten will eventually announce the Fox deal, but I don't think they're going to do it until the whole thing is done.
Yeah.
The Big Ten, do you think they've got a chance to luck out in terms of being lucky with the timing that they can max out with this thing?
They're in a lot better spot right now than, say, the Pac-12, right?
Right.
The Pac-12 is in pain right now. The numbers aren't good. Things aren't going great for them with the network.
And the way the Pac-12 network is set up, by the way, it's not set up like the Big Ten network, and that really hurts them.
It does, significantly. The Big Ten network had the opportunity to really look at what everybody else is doing. And, you know, there's a statement in business people make, at least in our business in tech, a first-mover advantage, right? And it's something to be – the first-mover advantage is a little bit dangerous because if you look at the history of most businesses, the first mover a lot of times isn't the best mover, right? They're the ones who go and run over all the speed bumps and everybody else watches the mistakes they make and does a little better later.
Right.
First-mover advantage works in a circumstance where you're talking about like Snapchat or Facebook or where you're trying to lock up a bunch of users before anybody else tries. That's not at all the case here, right? I think the Big Ten did it right by saying, look, let's let somebody else do this first and see how it plays out. See how that playbook goes, and then we'll start talking about what we're going to do. I actually think the Big Ten, next to the SEC, is in the best situation of any of the conferences.
No question.
You know, when it comes to economics, when it comes to the ability to grow, and what we're going to see in the future of college sports. You know, it's the ACC, the Pac-12, it's the big. You know, it's funny to call it the Big 12, the Big 8, or whatever it is now. Really, the Big Ten with you know TCU and you know a Baylor, but. They're hurting, and they don't know what's next. And the funny thing is people who watch sports don't realize that until they really dig into the back end and realize that, wow, if you were buying stock right now in the networks, the Big Ten and the SEC, I mean, that's Google and Apple, right? Mm-hmm. And the Pac-12 is Yahoo.
All right. And that's interesting about that because we look at markets, and I know we have a southern and western shift in the population. All right. Everybody knows that. The Eastern time zone now has 47% of the nation's population. That's not the way it was 10, 20 years ago.
Sure.
Yet they're able to parlay this because they still have the markets and the brand names. The brand names mean something, right?
It's changed significantly. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, you and I know that LeBron James plays in New York.
Right.
Right? He has to because it's just not easy enough to swallow the content. It goes back to what we were talking about with soccer. The reason soccer has exploded is not the MLS. The quality of play in the MLS is poor. It's because we can consume what's happening with the greatest players in the world much easier with La Liga and with EPL. That's what's happening here at the Big Ten is now you don't necessarily have to be there to enjoy the Michigan Harbaugh brand, the Penn State brand, the Michigan State. You know, that doesn't matter anymore. And it becomes easier for coverage to cross time zones. It becomes easier for coverage to be, you know, across the country. And that's where the Big Ten's really going to benefit, and that's where it's going to be very interesting to see what happens on the West Coast, which is really buoyed by two teams. I mean, you get west of Texas, the only people who are watching nationally, the only teams they're watching is USC.
Right.
People talk about Oregon, but, it's not the same.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them and what conference they end up in.
Right, and that's something to watch for. It's interesting you say about the MLS. The MLS has a lot of guys that are young trying to cut it, but they also have the guys that are no longer wanted in the EPL but want to continue their careers.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. The brand isn't really that great, but they...
No, but it's my opportunity to see Kaká. I've been watching him on TV for 10 years, and now he's going to come over and play here. They tried that with Pele, you know, years and years and years ago, but it didn't work because nobody had seen enough of Pele. But now... He comes over, and Beckham comes over. He was the first one to really do it with the Galaxy. And you have, you know, Didier Drogba and all these guys coming over that people are, you know, diehard fans of for life. And they just want to get a taste of it. And it doesn't matter that you don't live in the area to watch it. And that's the way it is with Penn State football, right?
Right.
I mean, I have a friend over here who's the chief strategy officer for Ticketmaster. He's one of the biggest Penn State fans ever. He flies out for every game. But The reality is he can consume the brand now from the West Coast.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. And that's why the Big Ten and the SEC are in such good shape when it comes to the way they've done their deals with their networks.
And if he does get back east to a game, tell him to stop by and say hi.
He knows you well. He's a huge fan.
Good. Well, thank you. You know what? I've been telling everybody here there was one. All right, so hey, Tony, thanks so much. Enjoy San Francisco. I'm jealous that you're in San Francisco.
I'm the jealous one. You're going to Oakmont. Yeah. So I'm hoping that you guys get the theatrics we've seen at Oakmont in the past. I mean, maybe we have the ghosts of Arnie Jack and the boys coming up with this next generation, and we get a Ricky Day, Speed McElroy shootout that we'll be talking about 30 years from now, right?
That would be cool. Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much.
Absolutely. Love talking to you guys. We'll talk very soon.
Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Great day today here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Kimberly Jones, NFL Network. John Solomon, CBS Sports. Dieter Kurtenbach, Fox Sports. We went all around today. Great to have you with us. Can't wait to talk to you tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.